lips are sweet, soft like silk. Your tongue is sharp as a knife. And even though I stood up on stilts, I still couldn't reach that high. If you give me one more chance, well, I'll give it one last try. So honey, look in my eyes. I come knocking at your door, and you and I will go walking.
Hi, this is Carl Weinschenk for the Daily Music Break. The Daily Music Break covers all music, regardless of era or genre. We're at www.dailymusicbreak.com. Daily Music Break also has free email newsletter, so please let me know at the site if you'd like to have those sent to you, and we'll do it right away. Today, we're very pleased to be speaking with Ian McFerrin. Ian is a singer-songwriter, and really anxious, eager to talk to him about what's going on. How you doing, Ian?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Carl.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Ian, tell us a little bit about your music, you know, what you're up to, how many albums you have, what's going on. That's the best place to start, I think.
Well, we're working on a new one. This will be our eighth album. We started out, you know, playing in Seattle with local musicians, kind of playing on the local pub and music club scene back in 2003. And there was a radio station in town that, back then, it was really cool that used to play, you know, the hits and then some old favorites, but they also played local music. And we got in with them, and that got us on some great bills with some national touring artists. And we ended up opening a pair of shows with Patty Griffin, who we were big fans of. Right. And that got us linked up with a guy named Doug Lancio, who produced her 2002 album, A Thousand Kisses. And so we've been recording with him. This is our third album we've done with him, and he always pulled together a great group of musicians, and just always lots of good creative energy, and exciting to be working with him. He just did the John Hyatt album that is up for two Grammys this year, too, so that was really exciting to get that news in the beginning of this project and kind of infused it with even more excitement and creative focus. So that's what we're up to at the moment.
That's great. I actually forgot. I usually do this at the beginning. Can you let folks know where to get a hold of your music, where they can download and listen to some of your stuff?
Yeah. So we're still totally independent, and we just like to be on any outlet that we possibly can. So our music's on iTunes. It's on Amazon. It's on our website, which is always probably the best way for us, for people to get the music, which is ianmcferrin.com, which is ianmcferrin.com. We're also on Spotify, Pandora. We like to have our music wherever people are hanging out, in hopes that people enjoy it and connect with it. So
It sounds like you have all the bases covered.
Yeah, try to. It's an ever-evolving landscape out there. So, you know, and people, I feel like, have different preferences of how they like to listen to music. Some people still love, you know, to own music. Some people like to stream music. And I guess our hope is just that people interact with it, and that it's meaningful to them, and that it, you know, it adds some, you know, some perspective, you know, to their life, or that they find it useful, you know. So we want them to find it wherever they like to hang out in music.
Yeah, some people still listen to vinyl albums on tube amplifiers. You know, some people are just like that, I guess.
Yeah, I've got a record player at my house with an old tube amp, and I don't know. I mean, there's the whole vinyl debate, but I actually think that there is something more captivating about that medium, but. But, you know, then I pull out my old CDs, too, and they sound pretty good, too. So, you know, streaming is I feel like streaming is a good way to graze music and browse and discover music. But if you're really going for, you know, digging deep into the arrangements and I think having that extra fidelity that CD or vinyl offer, you know, just kind of draws you into all that nuance that sometimes gets lost when you compress music down into more manageable file size.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that a lot. I don't have as discerning an ear as the music does, but I'll take your word for it. Ian, to give people some perspective, who are some of your influences and who would you kind of liken yourself to of folks that people might have access to and listen to a lot?
Well, growing up, my two oldest sisters especially, they always liked to dig through my folks' vinyl record album when we were kids. And so, you know, coming up in the mid-80s and early 90s, we didn't listen to a lot of the radio, but we listened to a lot of, you know, Beatles and Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, Paul Simon, Donovan, a lot of 60s and 70s singer-songwriters. And so in a way, I mean, being a kid and having that just be the music that was always playing in the house, you know, it, even though it was music that was from my parents' generation, it sort of felt like the soundtrack to my childhood, you know. And so I remember when I was about 17, I was at a local record store, which still exists, which is kind of encouraging, called Silver Platters in Seattle. I was picking up an album by a local alternative rock band called Super Deluxe that I used to like. And there was a three-pack of Bob Dylan's second, third, and fourth album, mm-hmm. Free Willin' Bob Dylan, Another Side of Bob Dylan, and The Times They Are Changing. And I remembered listening to Dylan, you know, when I was a kid with, you know, in my dad's old records. And so I picked it up. And for some reason at that age, his lyrics especially hit me from a different angle. I think when I was a kid, I connected with some of the more, you know, images like, you know, Mr. Tambourine Man or a song like Blowing in the Wind, that although they're complex lyrically, there's sort of a central image that's easier for, you know, a child's mind to connect with.
Right.
I remember listening to those albums when I was 17, and sort of the more abstract, I guess, nature of his writing really struck me, and that was kind of, I guess, what got me interested in writing lyrical music. And and then, you know, contemporary guys like, you know, Ryan Adams and Ray LaMontagne and Patty Griffin, the Wood Brothers, Justin Townes Earl, all those guys that are kind of on that branch of the Americana family tree that is continuing the tradition of narrative and story. And I guess, you know, trying to help people in the midst of all the busyness of life, you know, I feel like people are maybe mentally, psychologically busier than ever, you know, and some of that's spurred on by technology. And I think from a narrative artist, I guess what I feel like I'm looking for in narrative artists and maybe other listeners of that genre are looking for is people that root them and anchor them back down and I don't know, some of the more spiritual aspects of living and sort of giving you cause to take a pause and look at your own life. Mm-hmm. So I feel like narrative artists are sort of writing about the same things that other people experience in their daily life, but it's sort of like trying to highlight these moments that otherwise could just mm-hmm. blow past, you know. So I like any artist that can do that, you know, that can do that effectively and can help me, you know, as a listener to take that pause, and that's what I try to do in my music as well.
Well, I think that's really well put. I you know, you describe what you're doing or what you want to do, what you appreciate in the other artists, I think, really quite incisively. So thank you for that. So is it fair to say that, you know, it's not which comes first, but are you consider yourself more of a lyricist than a composer of the music itself? Are they even? What is the kind of the creative process like for you?
Well, I started out when I was a kid. I started out on the piano. We had this piano that was just kind of shoved under the stairs at my folks' house, and it kind of become more furniture than a musical instrument. Mm-hmm. And I just started playing it just for fun. And so I grew up making up just instrumental kind of melodies. I'd put chord progressions together on the left hand, and I'd just kind of weave through melodies on the right. It was mostly improvisational and things. And then I got into writing poetry in high school. I had a really good creative writing teacher that sort of got me excited about words and how you could be, I guess, really using language in a lean way, which I guess being loquacious by nature, I you know, was always a meditation for me to try to make each word count, you know. Mm-hmm. And I have a sister who's a poet, and I always looked up to her as well. So, but it wasn't until college that I started trying to put those two interests together. And I guess they kind of, you know, for me, most of the writing, or the way I prefer to write is to, you know, pick up an instrument, whether that's a, you know, guitar, or sit down at the piano, and you kind of start moving through a chord progression, and you kind of, I don't know, something kind of bends your ear in a certain way, and maybe that's tied to a certain sentiment or emotion you're feeling at that particular day, at that particular moment, and then you kind of start humming through or a melody, and a chord progression has, you know, several different melodies that you know you could lend to that sequence of chords, but you know, you kind of hum through and find a melody that has a sentiment that matches what you're, you know, kind of what you're feeling at the moment, and then I guess it's kind of a process of connecting a memory or a thought or an experience that you've had to that sentiment. And attaching all those pieces together and weaving them together to kind of paint a picture of that time. It's a little bit of, I feel like in a way, you know, writing songs is a way of taking this kind of constant, continuous thread of experience in life and pulling out, sort of mm-hmm. removing one and putting it into a form that's more self-contained. In some ways that makes it, I guess, easier to understand your own experiences and emotions, sort of like your own meditative psychology sessions, I guess. But also you hope that it becomes a space for other people to inhabit. Right. When I first used to write, I didn't really have a whole, you know, a real drive to perform my songs for other people, because I thought of them as being very personal. But once I did, you know, I had some friends encourage me to try playing out, and once I did, I realized that, you know, a song kind of gains a whole different dimension as you invite people into it. Sort of like your house sort of kind of warms up when you start having friends over, or you have a housewarming party, you know, it kind of gains a new energy and a new, and to me that started, I guess, driving the desire to create and to perform, and it added more purpose to what I was doing outside of just kind of being a bedroom guitar player, I guess. So,
you've grown 8 out. How have you evolved in any way you want to address over 8 albums? I mean, 8 albums is a lot.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I guess I feel like the way that the creative process maintains relevance is you never want to make an album that you've already made. You know, you don't, I mean, there are always new songs, but you've got to keep changing your method and changing your process, I think, to try to come up with a new sound. And I started out, I guess, you know, my first album was kind of folky pop. I feel like listening back now, I hear a lot more influences from, you know, 90s acoustic-driven pop artists like Glenn Phillips from Toad the West Rocket. When I was in high school, I was a fan of that band, and the Jim Blossoms and those kind of groups. Our second album was a lot more blues driven, and I guess just I've always been interested in American music. I think American music is, you know, it sort of reflects the cultural makeup of of our country, you know, you have elements that come from, you know, West African traditions. You have elements that come from, you know, the folk music from the British Isles. You have all these kind of pieces, you know, calypso, I mean, and they're co-mingling and sort of influencing each other. And I guess I first really noticed that the first time we played in the United Kingdom and in Ireland, and that was the first time I felt like my music was American music. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of that comes from music that's backbeat driven, you know, kind of heavy on the 2 and 4 of the measure, and that's, you know, that's coming out of, you know, some of that West African influence and on British folk music, you know, which has more of a downbeat, you know, like if you listen to Irish music and the Bahrain is really hammering down the quarter note pulse, you know, and you can kind of hear that in like Mumford and Sons, you know, with a kick drum hammering that pulse. But American music, you know, you listen to Levon Helm and what makes it so dancey, it's where that backbeat slaps down and breaks up the measure. And I don't know, I guess I feel like there's a constant thread that sort of is very American, you know, and it's, you know, I guess the musical attributes that I'm drawn to or I focus on, but there's a lot to American roots music. There's a lot of genres in there that you can pull from, you know, so jazz, swing, country, gospel, you know, folk, blues, and so there's just so many places you can go, and I feel like I remember when I was first writing papers in school, and my mom was always, you know, she was always on our backs about, you know, grades and doing our homework and stuff, and she would proofread our papers, and she was always honest about word choice. She didn't want us to use the same word, you know, maybe more than once in a paper. And sometimes I think about that when I'm writing songs. It's like, I don't want to use the same form. I don't want to use the same structure. I don't want the same melodies. I don't want the same moves to start creeping into what I'm doing, because mm-hmm. there's a stagnation there, and there's a boredom that can kind of grow out of that stagnation. As a songwriter, you will have certain, you know, stylistic elements that are a part of the way that you work, but I try to really push myself not to fall on, you know, the same crutches in terms of, you know, my chord progressions or my melodic choices. But, you know, at the same time, it's an intuitive process, so you know you don't want to be too deliberate about it either.
Right. Well, it what we've, you know, during this conversation, you've focused almost equally on the lyrics and, you know, the meaning of the songs, and you've also talked about the actual mechanics of putting together the song itself, the melodies and the harmonies, and, you know, the structure of the music itself. So it sounds like, you know, I would guess, you know, not really knowing you, but I would guess that one of the reasons you've been able to do 8 albums and have attracted, you know, a top-notch producer is that you focus on both, and you're not really sort of a one-trick pony, that you're very conscious of both elements of it. You know, it's pretty obvious from talking to you.
Well, you know, I feel like the lyrics sort of, my hope is that the lyrics grow as I, you know, move through my life, you know, as they reflect my life experience. And you know, the things that I'm concerned about now in my mind and in my heart are not the same as I was when I was 23, you know, and I made that first, or I guess maybe even younger, 21, 22, when I made that first album. Right. You know, back then I was real, you know, I'd had, you know, sort of my first love kind of go south. It didn't work out, and I was pretty broken up about that. And I was sort of writing out of a sort of a lashing out, I guess, kind of feeling, or reaching out, you know. And then now I feel like I'm more interested in, I guess, trying to address questions of meaning, like, you know, what does it mean to be here, and connecting with these other people who are also sort of equally wondering what the meaning of being here is, and trying to breathe some of that into the music. And so I feel like as you grow through the seasons of your life, you want your words to reflect that growth. Mm-hmm. And the music, you know, I guess the music is just sort of, in some ways, it's just whatever it seems interesting. Like I went off on a Levon Helm kick a couple years ago, and some of that sort of kind of conjuring up, you know, his spirit right. and his joyfulness that sort of started creeping into our last album, Time Will Take You. And, you know, I guess some of the musical elements sort of evolve around what you're listening to. But then what you're listening to also reflects the season of your life and what you're interested in. So it's all interconnected. And that's where I think intuition is your guide. You don't really consciously evaluate those choices. You just kind of move through them, and it steeps and percolates out, and something new hopefully emerges from that.
That's great. It's very well put. You're very articulate about what you do. It's a pleasure to listen to. And if you're going to go on a one guy kick, I mean, Levon Helm's a good kick to go on, right?
I would just, I guess, if I were to try to summarize what he does, it's just joyfulness. You know, he's so musical, or he was, unfortunately, since he's passed, but he was so musical and so joyous in his playing. And you know, it's interesting if you try to dissect Levon's drum beats, you know, and if you try to lay them against a metronome click, you know, you hear all these movements and you hear all these things, but that's not what he was about. He was about feeling his way through, you know, those rhythms and making those rhythms, you know, get you up and moving and dancing and celebrating your life. And I don't know of any better purpose of music than that, right. You know, to get people celebrating, you know, their own existence. Mm-hmm. You know, through your song. And he was a master of that. You know, I think he was one of the best. He and Richard Manuel too. I think Manuel had that same sentiment on the piano. Mm-hmm. And those two, I think, really worked off each other well.
Beautiful. Ian, it's been great talking to you. If you could repeat, your music's available everywhere. And if you could just give the URL again of the site, if people want to visit your site and check it out.
Yeah, it's just ianmcferron.com, which is IANMCFERON.com. Mm-hmm. And yeah. You find all our stuff there.
And when do you anticipate the next album is going to be available?
We're hoping to put it out in April, and we got a mastering date in mid-February, so that's sort of always the kind of the deadline to hit. So we're hoping that going from there, be able to send it to production and have it out by April. So
beautiful. Well, we're looking forward to it, and very much appreciate you taking time out and chatting with us. It's great.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I love talking music, so anytime I get to talk music with music lovers, I'm always happy.
Great. Well, this is Carl Weinschenk for the Daily Music Break at www.dailymusicbreak.com. Please stop by, check out all the music across all eras and genres, and sign up for some free email newsletters, and perhaps even participate in our charity trivia music contest, which we just started. So please check that out. And thank you, everybody, very much for listening. Bye-bye. Down by the seashore, 'cause you warm my heart and you're to the end. You make me feel like a better man.